Francesca present Santa Matrimony.
All right, we're here for another episode of Santa Matrimony. This is a non-car edition because we had to see this separately. But this week we are talking about Silver Linings Playbook. Is there an S in there? Yeah. Linings.
But it's not.
I will say not. It's not really. It's not really a very good title. I think it's based on a book.
Yeah, but the book was not named that. I believe.
Yeah, I don't really care about the title, I guess. But I did think that in the movie of like this is not a very good title for this movie. I would have been.
It was sort of a conceit that they kind of like dropped like 20 minutes into the movie. Like
yeah, they didn't really ever commit to that
for a while, and then he's just kind of like, I'm not going to talk about that anymore.
But it is obviously it's the Best Picture nominee. It is nominated for several acting awards. I think actually, Bradley Cooper is not nominated, but Jennifer Lawrence is, Jackie Weaver is, and Robert De Niro is, and we can talk about those individually, but. I'm kind of curious, Francesca, because I've had most of a week, I guess, now to have this one sit on me. But what do you think, having just seen it?
I really, really liked it.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
And I didn't have any idea what to expect because...
Me too.
And I feel like that maybe this also was with The Fighter, too. Somehow... David O. Russell keeps you just unsettled enough that I really was like, I don't know how this is going to go.
Yeah.
Like, I actually could see this not going well. Spoilers, by the way, to come. But
always spoilers in Cinematic Money.
It's Hollywood ending, but kind of the first half of it is so bleak and sort of so stark dealing with mental illness, I feel like, which sort of every character is on some level dealing with.
Yeah, for sure.
That then when things get a little Hollywoody, it actually doesn't feel that contrived, and you do feel like they've earned it. And there somehow, even though, you know, you kind of everything works out in the end, it feels like, no, like this is not so perfect that it feels false. I don't know. Somehow,
you know what I
like,
think?
I can't understand how it works.
You know what
I
think it is? I think what it is that these are really super flawed characters, and I would say this about The Fighter, too. But he makes them really, really sympathetic.
But it took a while, too. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Starting out, I'm like, how am I going to like these people? Because
well,
they're all kind
I think,
of...
I think what, in part, he is able to accomplish is that he makes the characters who are not as flawed, like in the first movies, in The Fighter's case... He made the people who are not drug addicts and degenerates who are sort of wrecking Dickie's life. He made the quote unquote normal people not really very likable or identifiable. And I think in this movie, he made the people who don't have mental illness sort of not very likable. And so I think that sort of draws you to the weaker character. It helps you get over those characters' weaknesses because it, you know, you start looking at them as, you know, they're the most likable people. They're the ones to pull for.
But, I mean, you say that, but I think to a man, everybody in this, you know, like even his buddy, whose name I don't remember, whose wife, like even Veronica, even though she was a very small character, you see these, these moments of like, she's a pretty distraught person too. Like, you know, that her sister's being so hostile to her and she's actually not... She is not being mean to the Jennifer Lawrence character, but
she just doesn't know how to deal with her or talk to her.
But she is actually trying her best, and you get these flickers of her being really distraught and, like, trying, too. And it's kind of, you know, and his buddy who's living this yuppie lifestyle is sort of having, like, a not really mental illness issue, but just sort of the kind of anxiety and stress that goes along with being an adult. And, like, he's not, even though he's got it all together... He doesn't have it all together. Like, he's getting overwhelmed with his life and is not happy. And so, you know, and Jackie Weaver's character is, you know, has to, like, walk this fine line of being supportive but not being, you know, like, allowing people to be codependent on her. But
yeah,
she doesn't want to enable
strong.
Them. But
she's
so sad and worried all the time because she's got these two men who both have... pretty big issues, and so she's trying to, like, not feed into it, but sometimes she's like, fine, I'll help you find the tape, you know? Like, she's kind of just trying to hold down the fort, and, you know, everybody's got their issue. I mean, even his brother, who was a very small character, comes in.
Oh, yeah.
And the way he, that first scene, when he's going, like, I'm having all this success, and everything's terrible for
right,
you.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, everything's, I'm about to get engaged.
But that was a very honest, that was a very honest thing for him to do.
That's what I'm saying, like, is, you know, even though he's quote-unquote got it all figured out, he doesn't know how to deal with his brother, but
right.
it wasn't coming from a bad place. Like, there's not really anybody to dislike in this movie because they're all made so sympathetic.
Well, then that surprises me, because let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. I do think that this movie, if I had one concern going, you know, leaving this movie and thinking, I wonder if Francesca's going to like it or not, it was the Jennifer Lawrence performance, because I really, really liked her a lot. And I thought that she, and Brett, I have to say, I cannot overemphasize how surprised I am that I was charmed by a romantic comedy that starred Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper. But I really...
Don't you remember Alias and how we liked him so
I did
much
like
more
him.
Than
I did like him
Michael
in that.
Vartan.
But I think part of it is that...
Ah!
He's,
that, what have you done?
That was a really weird thing that just happened.
No, it's like stuck in her teeth.
Yeah, that was a cat. Oh, that was geez. A cat-related thing. Anyways, resetting here. I think what it is Bradley Cooper has left nice guy Bradley Cooper behind, and he's sort of made his profession recently out of being kind of a douche. And Jennifer Lawrence, while I think we both have said before on this podcast that, like, sometimes she can be great. And I think she was great in Winter's Bone, and I think she was great in Hunger Games. But I've also seen her in stuff where I really didn't like her at all. And I think it's sort of a careful balance with her between... I think she's at her best when she is underacting and underplaying. And if you ask her to be the manic pixie dream girl, it's not going to work. And she didn't do that here. She was a pretty grounded character for the most part.
Well, like I said, at the beginning of the movie, I was like, how am I going to be rooting for these people? I mean, it's not quite so hard to root for Bradley Cooper, although he was kind of obnoxious and obnoxious with her, but she was obnoxious. So I'm like, how am I supposed to root for these people? But somehow the hat trick happened, and you do end up going like, yeah, I like these people. I care about these people. And then by the end, I'm like weeping. And I will say it took
How great is the scene? Well, I mean, without it, just in case somebody doesn't care
whatever,
that much about spoilers, but how great is it when they announce their score?
It was great.
It's a really well played moment. Like, that didn't feel corny. It didn't feel like a dumb, like, Mighty Ducks moment.
Because the stakes were... It was just such a... It had all built so well and so organically and honestly to that point that, you know, you're like... We're all rooting for it because it's, like, the culmination of this family, like, getting it together. And, like, it's really all about his dad at that point.
Right.
That's why they're doing it. And, you know, it's... It was great. It really, like, it makes you go, like, this is the feel-good movie of Christmas? And how did that happen?
Yeah.
Because it's about a bunch of people with mental illnesses.
Right.
Who are not very nice and who are not very nice to each
and
other.
And are violent, yeah.
Yeah, and somehow it works out. But again, I think you've been through so much with them at the beginning that by the end you're just so happy that it all works out. But like I said, I mean, I honestly was like, you know, I guess because everything had felt so visceral and real at the beginning, I did kind of go like, I don't know, like maybe he's going to screw this up. Maybe this isn't going to work
well,
out.
Well, I guess that's earning
Although,
it, you know?
You know, you do get this little hint, you know, that he, you know, he's figured out what's going on with the letter situation and that he knows what's up. But honestly, when his ex-wife comes in, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the cake. This is the fighter and this is the cake. Like, it brings this tension and you're like, is he gonna fall back into his old ways? You know what I mean? Talking about the cake and the junkies.
The cake, yeah. Oh yeah.
And like that was the parallel that was being drawn in my mind. It was like, oh geez. Oh geez. Like this could go either way. I don't know. Maybe he's just
good analogy. That's great. I didn't even think about the cake, but yeah, that's sort of a very good parallel.
Thank you. I thought so. But you know, it was really good. And I spent a lot of the movie going like, you know, Robert De Niro is good, but I don't quite understand why he got nominated.
Well,
and then he has that scene where he's going like, son, like, this is why I'm doing this, is because I feel guilty. And that
oh my gosh.
Kind of everything was about that he felt like he hadn't been a good enough dad, so he was, like, trying to make up for it.
That's the first time that I have seen Robert De Niro act like a human being in a movie. And I really don't even remember the last time. You know, the film nerds, we have all really lamented Robert De Niro's sort of walking death that he has had in his career for the last, really, like, 20 years. And this was a guy who, at one point, was really the greatest actor of his generation. And he just turned into this silly parody of himself. And I'm so happy. I mean, really, it really made me feel good to see him, you know, cry in a movie again and really look like he was given a damn about his character. And it was more than, I think you are sort of, at first, you're conditioned to see Robert De Niro doing the Robert De Niro thing. But if you really think about that performance over the course of the whole movie, he's a very fidgety, strange, insecure guy with all these compulsions. And, you know, I think there's a lot going on there. And I think it really is a pretty significant step up for him from what he's been doing recently.
Yeah, well, obviously it's been acknowledged as such, but you know, I think I will say I do find, and I think this is a David O. Russell thing. The periodic like fast zooms were kind of took me out of it for a minute. Cause I'm like, that's just become so associated.
You mean like the super close up thing?
Yeah. That's just become so associated with like, you know, now it's a trope, the like stylish action movie that really took me out. But
it worked in the dancing though.
Well, that was okay. But I'm saying like every once in a while he would just do this real fast zoom into a face. But
yeah.
All of the like handheld stuff at the beginning, honestly, the first like what was it like half an hour of that movie where he's you know in the hospital and then he comes home, and it's all like real fast and it feels just so immediate and really it's unsettling to watch. That, like, I was kind of going, like, how am I going to, like, relax into watching this movie? It's really stressing me out because, but it, like, very well captured his manic, you know, episodes. Which, I guess, in a way, you know, it didn't seem like there was too much, I guess his manic stuff became depressive. Like, you know, sometimes manic was just staying up into the middle of the night and then going, like, oh my gosh, Ernest Hemingway is the worst, and blah, blah, blah. And then sometimes it was staying up in the middle of the night and then going crazy because he couldn't find his wedding tape. So I guess that was sort of, you know, the two sides of the coin. But I felt like it was a very accurate representation. I don't know how accurate the representation is because I'm not that familiar with bipolar disorder, but it was very effective in making you feel unsettled and like, I don't know what these characters are going to do.
That's what I think. They put you in his head almost, you know?
Yeah. And that, you know, he feels better when he's, you know, rattled. And, you know, that certainly is a thing that people who have the highs and lows don't want to take medications because
they
say it's, you know, dulling them. And I think to some extent it's true, but in other extents, if you're going to become, if you're going to damage yourself or other people.
Or if you're going to hit your mom.
Right. And then your dad's going to beat you. Oh, it was pretty intense stuff.
Yeah.
But so good.
Yeah, I really, really, I was really surprised by how satisfied I was with it. And, you know, like, the thing that everybody that we heard, all the film nerds that saw this before us, keep saying was, this movie is so much better than the trailers make it look like.
Well, and I understand, because that's the thing I was, like, struggling with as I'm watching it. Like, I'm like, it kind of is ultimately a romantic movie, but like that's just because that's been such a cheap, and it's like a good romantic movie.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
They used to make, you know, and instead they keep making Nicholas Sparks novels.
But it kind of feels like a 70s, you know, and I think The Fighter was like that too, but it feels like one of those, you know, those 70s character driven pieces where you can have a romantic plot line in it, and at the same time, that's just part of it. It's also about this guy, you know, overcoming his inner demons, and there's also comedy in it. You know, I really, the other scene besides the you know the dance competition that I really felt like shouldn't have worked and should have felt silly, but it didn't, was the scene where Jennifer Lawrence comes in to their house and starts sort of like breaking everybody down and going like, listen, I'm going to play your stupid game here and I'm going to still win even on your own terms.
Well, and I guess I didn't think about it until you just said that, but I guess that's sort of a callback to that's her growth because, you know, she says everybody gets what they want from me, but I don't get what I want
right.
in my life. And so she kind of goes and like takes charge and goes like, listen, this is how I'm getting what I want.
Right. And she did her research. Yeah. I really thought it was a pretty funny scene. And I thought everybody in that scene, that was everybody individually, their funniest scene in the movie. And even still, like, it doesn't end on a happy note. It actually kind of gets dark right at the end too. You know?
Cause she says you get a sense that his mom, they were like trying to set he and Tiffany up.
Right.
Like from the get-go, which is weird. But it's like very quickly referenced, just that she says like, well, you called me and told me he was going to be walking.
The dad was not. The dad was not.
Yeah, or running through the neighborhood, which
right.
I thought that was a kind of interesting thing. And then it goes into them also continuing to manipulate him. But of course he figures out what's up. Which I figured out too. Whatever. I think that was a door that
with
was
line.
Pretty open. That first reading the letter that you kind of
even
get
before
that, she wrote
it. I think. Well, I thought.
Oh
that
yeah,
too,
well, you got a sense that she was never going to
in the
it
scene.
To
I'll tell you when I noticed it, and I'm not lying that I did notice this when her little phrase that he catches her out
yes.
on when she said it for the first time when she's in her big monologue scene in the house that I caught it right then and said, oh, I think that was in the letter.
It was, but it was apparent. Oh, I thought it was apparent when he was first reading the letter that she had.
Yeah, but I'm saying I think that was like the callback to it.
Yeah, it was supposed to be. We were supposed to get there a little bit faster than he did,
I
think. But, now I'm not 100% sure. I think maybe now the Academy just loves Jackie Weaver. I think she was good. I don't know that
I'm
it was necessarily
you.
An Oscar
I'm,
role.
I'm with you. I don't. Nothing against Jackie Weaver. I wasn't blown away by her in the movie. I thought she did a good job, but it's not the kind of thing that I would necessarily.
I thought
throw her up for an Oscar.
An interesting.
For. She's not beaten Hathaway in my book yet.
Nah. I think an interesting and sort of bold move was that there was a lot of therapy scenes, and they were just kind of like therapy. Like, they were actually, and it was still very compelling and interesting, but, like, I feel like, you know, two men talking to each other about feelings is not something that, you know, a lesser filmmaker would feel comfortable to go back to six or seven times in
right.
a film. But they did, and it was very helpful, and it was very useful in... you know, expressing that his character understood what was going on.
Right. Even though he wasn't
which
properly
then
dealing with it.
I think also is a way of letting you, the audience, know, like, okay, he's not, you know, it's not a hopeless case. Like, he does understand and he knows what he needs to do, you know, and he understands why he's acting this way. It was interesting, too, to hear him talk about that, you know, like, I've been living with this my whole life and I just never realized it until I snapped. But, like,
right.
my whole life has been white knuckles, which is... an interesting thing because, you know, I think as you and I have been two people who have been to therapy, I think you do sort of get to therapy and go like, oh gosh, like I've been not dealing with certain things, but they've been around my whole life.
Yeah. It's a thing where you sort of, it's stuff that you never thought was a problem until someone points it out.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
So
I don't know.
I'd be interested to know what like people who have actual street cred when it comes to mental illness thought of this movie, but as someone with just kind of a walking around knowledge, I thought it went a long way to sort of shedding light on people and, you know, I need to be sympathetic to people of all walks and all issues.
Where does this fall out of the best? So we've now seen of the best picture nominees.
I hate it, this crap.
I just want to get your opinion on what you feel the best about. So we have Argo, Lincoln, Django. We have Beast of the Southern Wild. What else? What else was out there? Didn't we see something else fairly recent? Oh yeah, Les Mis. Uh-huh. So where does this? Where does this, you know, stack up for you with all of those?
Well, I always have an issue with this because I don't, you know, I think Lincoln is the most Academy-ish, but I mean, in terms of those films that I probably liked and felt the most satisfied by, it probably was this movie.
Yeah.
I think.
I think a lot of people are feeling that way.
But, you know, I mean, Lincoln to me or Argo are like Academy movies. Like, those feel like ones that should win. This one kind of feels.
But you wouldn't maybe be, you wouldn't be upset smaller. If this movie won, no, obviously.
I don't like that. But yeah. It seems like kind of stories of more epic scale usually are the ones that win the day. Or of more, you know, cultural significance in as much as, like, being historic.
Well, you never know. Slumdog Millionaire surprised us all a couple years ago, so we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyways. We both greatly enjoyed.
Yeah, and I'm happy.
Silver Linings Playbook, and think that you should go see it.
This seems to be the direction David O'Rourke. Like, now I'm actually interested in seeing the next movie because until The Fighter, he was somebody that I was kind of like, oh, I don't know about.
I totally agree. I like.
Now he's had two that I've gone, okay, these are really good movies.
I hope that this is becoming a. You know, his voice now. So,
yeah.
All right.
All right. Good talk.
Good talk. Good talk.